Hey everybody, welcome into another episode of Comics Experience. This is a new format that we're going to try since we've had a number of behind the scenes conversations of getting Heather, Jim, and Nicole all together on the same call to discuss a couple of different topics. And unfortunately, due to schedules, we are not able to really get everybody to line up at the same time. It's scheduling, it's people living on different coasts, and all the life stuff. So today what we're going to do is we're going to take a listener question and we're going to tackle it with Heather, who is on the line now. And then after Heather, we're going to tackle Jim. So we're going to break it into smaller chunks with two different editors and writers who have worked for publishers that do direct, you know, Marvel, Valiant, Image, Dark Horse, and then the creator-owned side, everything in between. So I think we have a very good representation of different comics publishers for this specific question. So Heather, I will recap this for the listener that we got from Levi. And this is, Levi sent this to info@comicsexperience.com, which you can also do if you're listening, and you have a question that you want to hear talked about on the show. When coming up with a new comics project, do you advise considering the target demographic and sales and marketing strategy before building the comic, or the other way around? The other way around being to create a comic and then find a way to sell it. I've heard from people like marketing guru Ryan Holiday that the former is the better way, but I've heard from people like William Goldman that it's better to do it the latter, something along the lines of supply creates its own demands, ergo create the product first and then track the demand. What do you guys think? Cheers, Levi. So basically, considering the target demo and sales and marketing strategy ahead of the comic or after you made the comic, then start considering that. That is a sizable question. and your different hats over the years and creator owned at Marvel, at working with Image, I imagine there might be some different approaches, or maybe there's not. Has it all been probably not a one-size-fits-all solution?
It's definitely not a one-size-fits-all solution, at least in my opinion. And I do want to preface that while I speak. I'm not, you know, a marketing expert by any means. I'm an editor, but I can speak to what I look for when I'm reading pitches, be it for Marvel, for Valiant, or for self-published creator-owned stuff. This is all my opinion and what I've seen create successful comics in the market today. And so I figured we'd work from the top down, go easiest to hardest in my opinion. And easiest is always going to be your licensed characters. It's going to be your big two. It's going to be, you know, your Batman, your Captain America, your Star Wars, your Power Rangers, that sort of thing. These are already commercially household names. So when you're working with a publisher that big that has these icons, what I have been taught and what I've learned, in order to sell any comic, you need two of three things. You need a known character, a known creator, and a stellar concept. So at Marvel and DC, you're always going to have, or for the most part, unless it's a brand new character or a DC D-list character, you're always going to have that character, right? Mm-hmm. You're going to have that Batman story. You're going to have that Superman story, that Black Widow story, that Captain Marvel story. And so that's an easy sell, right?
Right.
But then add on top of that, well, now you have Mark Waid and John Cassaday doing this Batman story. Oh my God, that's a fantastic sell. Retailers will hop on that in a second. It doesn't matter if it's, you know, Batman just sitting in the bathroom with food poisoning for 20 pages.
Hold on, I gotta write this down.
but it's, you know, like it's you have the stellar creative team with this iconic character. Retailers can sell that. Now add on top of that, you know, it's Mark Waid, John Cassaday, and Batman in Alaska for 30 days where there's no darkness. Mm-hmm. And now he can't be the man in the shadows. Well, that's an interesting concept. So now you have, you know, all three ballpark home run to sell this comic. You're not always going to have all three. More times than not, you're not going to have all three. It's just impossible. It's right. you can't have an A-list creator on every single comic. You can't even get a B-list creator on every single comic. Same with the characters. There's just not enough of them to go around. And so that's why, big publishers, you'll get things like where I got to experiment a little bit when I did Deadpool vs. Old Man Logan. That's a concept that's going to sell no matter what, because it's these two A-list characters. So you already have your characters, you already have your concept. That's where I got to try out Declan Shelvey as a writer who's not known for being a writer. He's known for being an artist. But if the concept was strong enough and the characters were strong enough, then that's enough to get retailers to sell. And that's, that's something that I think creators for the big two, they don't have to worry about. That's not something they have to think about in their pitches. Right. That's something the companies have to think about. And these companies have some of the biggest and best marketing departments in the country and in the industry. Creators working for the big two, creators working for any work for hire comics, just don't have to think about marketing, period. That's not their job. That's not something you should be worrying about. So in that case, the big publisher doesn't really apply to this question. but to get you in the head, that's what we think while we're working at the publishers.
Right.
However, to take it down a notch to your more independent publishers, like Valiant, like Dark Horse, like IDW, Boom, et cetera, that have lesser known characters, but they still have characters that are their characters. The character part of that marketing pitch is not as strong to the retailers. That's where it's more important that the creative team is solid and the retailers feel that they can sell this creative team, but also that the concept is strong. And this also works for some of your creator owned too, right? You can get away, I think, in the creator owned world, if you're a big name creator, a lot of times you can rely on just your name to sell things, like Mark Millar. It doesn't matter if Mark Millar is just writing a comic about Joe Schmo who's sitting in the bathroom with food poisoning for 20 pages. People are going to read it because it's Mark Millar, and everything he writes becomes a Hollywood movie within the next 5 years. And so now we've got a 3-hour film of Joe Schmo just sitting in the bathroom with food poisoning. but it works because that's his name, and his name is something that retailers are confident on. Retailers don't need any more information except the fact that Mark Millar's comics have sold X amount of copies beforehand, and that's what they're going off of.
Right.
If they're seeing a creator's name that they've never seen before, they don't know what to order. And they're not going to order anything unless they're confident in the product. So, and that standpoint, I think that's when it's important to have a preview of the product that you can send to retailers beforehand, in order that the retailers feel confident that, even though I don't know this creative team, I've read enough of the concept and I've seen enough of the product to know that this is something that I can sell. I know how to sell this. Again, that's something that the publishers have to worry about, not you as a creator, if it's work for hire. However, if you are a creator that is pitching a creator-owned project to a publisher, you do need to be able to give them something that the publisher can then sell. So that is what your pitch is. Your pitch is giving the editor enough information that they can then sell your pitch to the next level of the food chain above them. And so that's why I think it's always super important to think high concept. like, and what I mean by high concept is your Hollywood speech. It's, you know, XO Manowar, it's Conan in Iron Man suit. That's your high concept. I know what Conan is. I know what Iron Man is. I can put these two together and get an idea of what this comic is going to be.
Right.
And so that's what's super important, I think, for creators when working on creator-owned projects, when pitching creator-owned projects, or even marketing on their own. Come up with your story first, be confident in your story, but then figure out how to sell it. Who is it for? Who's your audience? What's the high concept? What can you compare it to tell your publisher, to tell your editor, to tell your customers, if you like this thing, you will also like my thing.
I think that so much of what informed me starting writing, and maybe, I don't know, 2 or 3 years into having people reading my scripts, when I had a universal reaction to a short script of, oh yeah, this is the best thing you've ever written or that I've read by you, it was because I stripped everything away, not to just try to make it high concept, but I stripped everything down to just what was important to the story. And I think so much of what I was catching up, getting caught up with, was all the minutiae that didn't matter. And it helped me better understand, oh, this is my story. So, you know, for me, it wasn't, it's how it happened. I was like, I have to make this streamlined. And so much of, I think, what you're talking about on the marketing side, to me, feels like it's great at informing too. You know, it can be, okay, well, I had the story that I love and I'm passionate about, but then when I started kind of whittling down to, like you said, you've got to give them the pitch to be able to pitch to retailers to get on board with, that really helped me go back and look and go, this is how I could, you know, edit and how I could shape and change. And, you know, think about it, when I'm in the comic store looking at a comic, or the shop owner tells me, hey, you like this comic, have you heard about this? It's not telling me that Warren Ellis has a new thing out. I know, you know, Warren Ellis comics, it's, I've never heard of this creative team, but this sounds great.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's like Night of the Living Deadpool, right? Like, I know what that is. Like, I know what that comic is. I don't need to know anything else. They literally took the high concept and made it the book's title.
I don't need to hear anything else. I get it. Perfect.
I get it. Yeah, I get it. I see a cover. Cool. It's for me. I'm in. Right. But, you know, you can't really get that with some of this, with everything. And so, like, Paper Girls, you know, it's like Stranger Things, you know, like that's what a lot of people compare it to. And you always have to think about how is the retailer going to sell this to their customers, how is the publisher going to sell it to the retailers, and that's when you have to think high concept, like you said, stripping out all the details and really figuring out what is the meat of this, what's the hook, and what is, you know, what is the elevator pitch? What's the log line that's going to get someone excited about this project? You can write the project beforehand, you know, be passionate about it. That's great. I think it ultimately depends on, like, people think creatively and process things differently in their heads. And some people just have the idea and write the story first, and other people think of the pitch first. And that's fine. Either way is fine. But at the end of the day, you do have to realize, you know, if your goal is to sell comics, then you have to figure out a way to sell the comic.
That is a very succinct way to say that. Seriously, that is. And it's so much, I think, the more you get into comics and realize the business aspects and how much of it is business, I feel like that was kind of a thing that I talked about with a lot of the people who are starting to really try to break into doing their own stuff or break into larger companies at the same time, was, yeah, I really have to think about this as a business. Representing myself, but representing the books the best that I can. And, you know, for love it or hate it, the term, you know, your brand, what is the thing you're trying to do? What are you trying to say? Who you're trying to be? Having those conversations, you know, with a creative team or with yourself, and figuring that out ahead of time is a good thing. So you know that you have that really great pitch document to send out. Or, you know, I've listened to Heather talk about Con Etiquette and going to conventions, and I know how the best approach an editor to say, hey, I'd love to work with you all. Here's some samples, or can I send you some samples of a pitch I've done, and getting to that point to share that pitch or to get that feedback from somebody that says, you know, I wasn't quite clear on this. And, oh, okay, well, how do I you know, get to a point where the editor is just super excited to take it to somebody else in their department, or to give it a give you a call or give you an email and make that next step, because you know, comic book publishers publish comics.
And I think you just said the most important thing, and there is, you know, it's not just about getting it in front of that editor, it's getting it in front of the next person. You need to get that pitch. You want that pitch to be what gets them excited and wanting to show someone else. Just like your number one issue should make you want to read number two. You know, that's what, whenever I get asked what makes a good number one, I say, oh, it makes me want number two. Mm. And you always need to be thinking about that next step. How do I get this so that someone wants the next step?
Yeah, I wish this was all done so I could read it all at once. Yeah,
exactly.
That's usually the sign of something really clicking. Well, do you feel like we've covered all of Lee's question? I know we're not trying to go super long since we have you and Jim, but I want to make sure we get the give it the proper due.
Yeah, no, I think that just, you know, the bigger the publisher, the less marketing work you have to think of. But when you're starting out at self-publishing, it's all about, you know, high concept. What is the most succinct one or two sentences I can do to get someone else to understand what this is and be excited about it?
Oh, I will highlight, since you are in the midst of your comics experience, how to kickstart your comic or graphic novel course, I will ask you about just kind of a general Kickstarter thought. If somebody is looking to crowdfund, you know, you're doing everything more than likely, mm-hmm. if you're crowdfunding. Creator owned, obviously, but anything that you would think a little bit differently on if somebody was doing a Kickstarter, or does most of the creator owned thoughts apply as far as how to market and think about, you know, who you want to pick up your story, or in this case, who you want to back the Kickstarter to make your comic or ship your comic?
Oh, it's even more important with Kickstarters, because with Kickstarters, you have a ticking time bomb. You only have 30 days. So it's even more important that you can pitch your comic in a tweet. Pitch your, like, literally.
No, that's it. No, it's 100%.
You need to be able to pitch your comic in a tweet, pitch your comic in an image, pitch your comic in, you know, literally, like, that is your hook. That is how you get people to click. Because once you get the click through, you have a more, like, I don't know the exact number, but I think it's something like, if you get the click through, you have an 80% chance that they're going to back.
Oh, wow.
Just kind of like, if you're in a comic store, you know, that cover, if that cover gets you to stop and pick up the comic, there's probably like an 80% chance they're actually going to buy it. You know, it's even more important with your Kickstarter that you know what your comic is and you can sell it in a tweet.
No, that's that. I think of the times that I've just clicked and said, yeah, I'm in, even if it's not necessarily a genre that I'm a huge fan of, but it just sounds great. And
yeah,
you click through and you go, oh, this art I really like. Oh, this is a reasonable, you know, price to back for somebody like me who just wants the comic or just wants the OGN. Perfect. It is funny how that can motivate in this weird synapsy firing, like, oh, I get it. I need this. Click.
Yeah. No, it's true. And it's how the industry and market works these days.
Metal Shark Bro. That's the one that came to mind. I don't
ooh,
know if that,
nice.
Was, if that was on your radar at all, but you read
no.
it and you're like, yep, I gotta, you know, everything. It's a big shark with a sword, and he's trying to get revenge on the people that transformed him into a shark. Okay, I'm good. Let's do this.
I mean, you know what? It sells itself. There you go, right there.
It's really great art too, and it looks very funny, very self-aware in the best possible sense.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah, I think so much of, you know, of comics in general is the, hey, did you hear? This sounds really cool. Or did you ever read that one? That was really great. It's Old Man Logan versus Deadpool.
Yep.
What? And Marvel Zombie. It is the things that you can kind of pass along quickly and go, oh, I get it. I love it. Without having to over explain things. John Grisham, the novelist, mm-hmm. I heard an interview with him last year where he said his way of working now, being mega successful John Grisham bookseller, stuff gets made into movies and TV shows and probably video games and underoos, is he has 30 seconds to pitch his wife. And if she says no, he goes back and reworks the concept. She is his first audience. She was that way with his first two books. His first book, not very successful. His second book was The Firm, and that kicked everything off, where he kind of went back and thought, okay, well, how can I make this, how can I get it to the core and make it its thing? And he said, ever since then, it's 30 seconds to pitch my wife, and if she's not in, then I go and rework it because I know I don't have her. And she's not doing him any favors by going, great, John, that sounds like another addition to the house. It doesn't do him any good to have a concept that doesn't work. So I thought that was a really great kind of mental note for me to go, oh, well, if I pitch this to, somebody who's not invested in my career, and said, hey, what do you think of this? That could be a good bellwether of, oh, wait, what? That sounds confusing. I don't get it. Just to be able to cleanly and clearly state, what this thing is. That might lean a little bit more into pitching, but for me, it kind of ties into the marketability aspect of.
But that's all a marketability is pitching to the audience now. You're not just pitching to a publisher, you're pitching to an audience.
I keep running that through my head. That's a really great way to say that too.
Yeah.
The end.
The end. We did
Heather has
it.
solved comics. I'm gonna write down for edit for me. All right, before we do Jim's piece, what do you have coming up? Anything to talk about on the Valiant front? Anything to talk about on the Heather Antos creator-owned other project front?
Well, what I can talk about is we announced the brand new XO Manowar series that I'm editing.
Whoa.
Yeah, coming out this fall, on sale at the end of September 2019. We have a brand new XO Manowar series with covers by Christian Ward, written by Dennis Hopeless, and interiors by Emilio Lyso. XO Manowar is back on Earth, as you might have noticed earlier in the conversation. If you don't know who XO Manowar is, he's Conan in Iron Man suit.
I heard a pitch for that earlier. I am on board.
I know. But yeah, XO Manowar, Arik, he's a Visigoth warrior from, the olden days, and was abducted by aliens and became the owner of this sentient alien suit that gives him essentially Iron Man's powers, and is now back on Earth thousands of years in the future in the present day. And he gets into a lot of fun super heroic adventures, and he hasn't actually been on Earth in a very long time. In the series, Matt Kent has had him out in space punching aliens, so I'm really excited to bring him back to Earth with Dennis Hopeless, who, if you don't know Dennis, is working on an amazing Darth Vader series right now with Marvel. He's doing the Spider-Man video game comic. He also did one of my favorite Marvel series, which was Spider-Woman. With Javier Rodriguez, which
Oh
is,
yeah, that's a great
yeah,
series.
it's a great series. And then Emilio Lyso worked with me on a bunch of Star Wars projects as well, such as Dr. Aphra and the Rogue One adaptation. So I'm really, really excited to bring them over to Team Valiant for XO Manowar.
Oh, that sounds terrific. That XO is one of those concepts that is super sturdy. Like you read, I've read the current Valiant incarnation of XO, and it's great. Like it's just really great. It's one of those like I at times sometimes when you read stuff or watch a movie, you're like, I can't believe this is a thing.
Yeah.
In the best possible sense. You're like,
Yeah.
I can't believe this is a thing, and it works so well, and I'm rooting for this guy. That's very cool. Well, I'm
Yes.
super excited that there's more XO on the way.
Yeah. And again, so you guys know, there's your character, your creator, and your concept.
I think you just illustrated the entire conversation. We really do
I
need to stop.
know.
You won comics. Let's stop it. HeatherAntos.com, @HeatherAntos on Twitter. Currently doing a Comics Experience Kickstarting course, which is not necessarily as helpful to you at this moment, but Heather is also doing a bunch more conventions, and you can find out where she's going to be on Twitter, and I'm sure through Valiant as well, and on the Comics Experience message boards. Thank you for asking the question, Levi, and thank you, Heather, for all your thoughts on it. And now, through the magic of editing, here is West Coast-based Jim Gibbons. All right, and now we're talking to Jim about the very same listener question. Jim, I mentioned recording with Heather that we've never been able to quite make timing work for everybody since there are different coasts involved, there are different responsibilities, there's different, I got to go to my, you know, physically show up at work and can't be available until later. So we've never been able to have you, Heather, and Nicole all do one of these episodes together, which has always been for at least, what, a year, a thing we talked about?
Yeah, we've definitely talked about, I think we've had at least three or four ideas where we're like, all right, this is going to be our first anthology episode or our first like multiple, you know, multiple host episode or whatever it is. But yeah, I'm excited to do this. I'm very curious to eventually hear what Heather's take was and then compare it to mine and see if we were agreed, disagreed or not. And regardless, I think the multiple perspectives of different editors are kind of a beneficial thing to listen to because no one does this job quite the same.
Maybe we can bill it as the Make Comics podcast panel. So unfortunately, you don't get to hear the other panelists, but kind of like a panel, sort of. Well, I'm going to restate the question just so you have it fresh as well. This is from Levi. When coming up with a new comics project, do you advise considering the target demographic and sales and marketing strategy before building the comic or the other way around? The other way around being to create a comic and then find a way to sell it. I've heard from people like marketing guru Ryan Holiday that the former is the better way, but I've heard from people like William Goldman that it's better to do the latter, something along the lines of supply creates its own demand, ergo create the product first and then track the demand. What do you guys think?
So I have like two answers, I guess maybe. I think one, my inclination would be overall when you're working in comics, or really in many places where you're going to be telling stories, right? You are working in a commercial platform, right? There is an art to what we do in making comics, just as there is to writing a novel or making a movie. But these are also all industries that function as professional industries where you have to make money. And that means you have to market and sell things. So I do think I would lean, if I had to choose a side, I would lean towards, yes, you should consider your audience. You should consider who the book might be for or the story might be for, probably before you're creating it, or at least, and this would be my second answer, I don't think there's necessarily two different things. I think you should be thinking about it probably, you know, again, if I didn't have to choose, my answer would be, it's the same thing. Think about it at the same time, right? How, and I know that's not like, you know, that this is me giving kind of a non-answer to a potentially like a A or B question. But I really think at the end of the day, if you're just creating a story in a vacuum, the odds are that story will definitely appeal to you as the person creating it, but you're kind of reducing your odds in who else that story might appeal to. And that can be very good. You can create a very nice artistic work that way, right? There's very personal stories written that people wrote for themselves and they put out there, and then they found there's an audience of people who also this appeals to or they can relate to and all that. But I do think if you're creating a story as well, there's also has a lot of potential to be beneficial to what you're doing. If as you're telling your personal story, whatever else you think to yourself, okay, what other books are like this? What other stories are like this? Who is this audience? You know, and even if it's a story about you, right? Even if it is that personal story, who are you? What about this story is very personal and unique, but also appeals to people beyond you? You know, if it's a story about being bullied, obviously many people have been bullied. That's a potential audience to connect to, and there are other stories out there about that. But so I think marketing and sales are really intertwined when it comes into storytelling. If you wanna sell it, you know, if it's just for you, if you're just gonna post it online somewhere or whatever, then you don't have to think about this as much. But if you want to make a living about it, I do think they're pretty intertwined, and whether you think about it first or second or at the same time, I think you have to be thinking about it. And I would lean towards thinking about it earlier in the process than later.
And if I'm working with Jim Gibbons wearing a Dark Horse editor hat. That could be a whole different conversation. If I'm working with you in a work for hire situation, or maybe a Dark Horse Presents situation.
It's true. I would say when I, as an editor at a publisher, my job would be able to look at any sort of story or any sort of pitch that would come in, and I would go, okay, what do I like this story? Obviously, is kind of the first question. Do I think there's a story here, something worth telling that I think's gonna, be interesting and be rewarding to work on and all that. But then the second question is obviously very quickly. Can my company sell this book? Like I can't get a book greenlit unless I can convince the powers that be at that company how to sell that book, or that book can sell, right? Like you can go into a meeting and go, I have a great story, and if they can't figure out how to sell it, they might agree with you that it's a great story, but at the end of the day, you're not going to get a budget to create a project unless a company believes that they can also make money on that project. Like that's not like a very like artistically based thing or whatever, however you want to call it, but that's the fact of the matter. That's how it works, but I would say from a freelance perspective, right? If you're working with me as a freelance editor, I would still say, hey, this is your story. You want to hire me to work on it? We have something we want to work on. We both agree to it. Great. But I'm going to be still hitting you with a lot of that same information of, if you're going to try and sell this book to somebody, here's something you might want to consider. I'm gonna frame it like that, and that might be different if you're. It's gonna be slightly different advice if you're looking to like kickstart or self-publish that book versus sell it to a publisher. But at the same time, I think a lot of this is, hey, what makes a good story? Okay, that's a lot of the editing process as well. But also as an editor, your job is to, I believe, take a look at the financials of how this project might work, and I think it's important to also, make sure you're talking to the creators about that as well.
And that, as a creator, like you said, it's something where you're thinking about it at the different times, at the different stages, and also the what is it? If it is just going on the web, if it is going out to be pitch pages or shown to you at a convention or going to Kickstarter, and that is one of the things that Heather and I did touch on, was thinking about crowdfunding. That is, you're the entire marketing arm at that point if you're putting your work out through Kickstarter. So it better be that 30-second pitch, that elevator pitch that somebody can understand, if that's what you're looking to do. And the sniff test of your story could be based on, well, can I explain it to Jim in 30 seconds? And if I can't, what do I not understand, or what's not working? Because, at the end of the day, it could be that could be all the time you have with Jim, or that could be the thing that Jim needs to go to the next person up or across the hall to say, hey, we're going to do this, and they go, I don't get
Right.
it.
Well, and I think the kind of way I'd kind of wrap up a little bit some of my point here, right, is like it would be amazing if we lived in like a perfect world where all creative endeavor was equally valued, and you could just every project, right? Every project is its own unique thing. Every project and every creator, they're doing something original. They're doing something new, even if it's a take on something or a riff on something. That's their take. That's their original thing, right? And it would be amazing if like all you had to do was come up with like something that you thought was good, and then everyone would go out and want to read it or buy it or whatever it was. But the bottom line is like there's too many options that way. That's not really how it works. There's an established industry built around all this, and it's in any form of entertainment media, right? Like there's genres for a reason, right? There's a reason why on the back of books you have stuff where, if you look at almost any book on the back, I think most comics at least, it'll say something like graphic novels, and then it will give you a genre like fantasy or sci-fi. And some of this is so retailers understand it. It's so booksellers understand it. So people stocking the books know where to put these books sometimes, It's for librarians to understand these things better, As you're building these things, I know at least at Dark Horse, I'm sure it's probably every publisher, people look for comparative titles when you're trying to bring on a book, and even major book distributors like a Penguin Random House are always like, okay, what are the comparative titles here? Because from a sales and marketing perspective, that's important. So you can go to a retailer or a bookseller, and you could say, hey, you bought you know, or you sold whatever it was, 50 copies of this YA novel. And guess what? This new graphic novel actually hits a very similar theme and hits a very similar audience. This might be a good thing for you to sell. You know, that's all part of this process, because every single comic is very unique. Every single story is very different. And you can't have every single person read the whole thing to understand how different it is. So you need these little understandings of how do you frame this? What genre do you put it in? What are the comparative titles? What are the little touch points you can give it so people who don't have time to read every single book can go, oh, that's interesting, I can sell that, or that's interesting, I want to support that, or whatever it may be. I mean, it applies to readers as well, but I think it's got to get into those bookstores and comic book shops before it ever gets to readers. But readers are the same way. You know, a retailer comes in, they go, oh, hey, you have this book in your pull list. Well, guess what? This new book is actually, like, I think it'll really appeal to you based on that. Those are the best retailers. Anytime anyone does that to you, you're always like, I feel seen, I feel heard, I feel known. And then also you go, I'm willing to take a shot on this because I did like that book.
Yeah.
And so I think that's the thing, right? It's not really an either or in my mind. I think it's an and, you know, it's like you need to be thinking about the marketing and the audience as you create a book. And that's not to say bend over backwards to, you know, make your book something that should appeal to that audience. I'm saying tell your story, but also your story is not likely meant to just sit on your computer somewhere. You're writing the story, you're drawing the story, you're putting together the story to get it out there to an audience. So I think you should think about the audience while you're doing it.
I think that is a great summation as well. So Levi, you got two comics editors and writers for the price of one podcast. And I think that is a great value, and hopefully you enjoyed the format change up for this, and I hope Jim, you will also enjoy that as well as Heather. If you have a question that you want to hear talked about in the show, you can email info@comicsexperience.com or tweet at Comic Experience. Jim is on Twitter at the Jim Gibbons, and you've got any number of things coming out. And I'm going to pause because this is coming out on April 24th, Jim. So you didn't know that ahead of time.
I don't even know what I'd talk about on April 24th. Probably just my newsletter, I guess.
Great. I'm going to put an edit GM note for myself so I know to edit here. All right. So go find Jim on Twitter. Sign up for his great newsletter that's all about comics and making comics, with a large focus on writing and editing and marketing. And it is a great, great newsletter if you haven't gone over to sign up with that. And you send it out at a good pace. I mean, you're not overwhelmed with newsletters, Jim. It's very appreciated, and it's always very thoughtful and chock full of stuff.
Thank you. Yeah, it's at thejimgibbons.com/newsletter.
All right, go sign up, and until next time, keep making comics.